Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner, and we are going to take a shift and come back home to Baltimore, across the nation, take a trip between Baltimore, Denver, whoever else this is, and look at the Ravens, the game this last week, the game coming up, and will there be more games in our future? We will see. And we have our same incredible crew with us. Cyrita Hubbard is back in the studio, publisher of the sports blogs NFLChick.com and GridironGals.com.
Good to see you. Thank you for having me.
I love those names. This is great. Ali Denois with us as well. Ali is a frequent contributor to WEA's The Baltimore Blend, senior editor of The Bounce magazine, freelance writer whose work is published in Dime magazine, LA Times, Baltimore Sun, and The New York Times. And Ali, good to see you too, man.
Thanks for having me back.
Good to have you both here.
Good to see you guys.
Thank you.
So before we talk about last Sunday, which I want to get to, talk about this coming Saturday and see what you all think. I'll say something you can... I don't want you all to hit me now, okay? But someone said to me the other night that if Peyton Manning was in a wheelchair, he would beat the Ravens. How would you respond to that?
I wouldn't have a response to that because he'd probably be right.
What is it about Peyton Manning and the Ravens, whether he's playing for Indianapolis or whether he was playing in Denver?
Well, the thing about Peyton Manning, let's talk about Peyton Manning in the last game. He wasn't even that great. He didn't have a great game the last game, but the Broncos found a way to effectively run the football. And as long as you can do that and keep defenses honest, yeah, you can get those balls downfield. He didn't have a Peyton Manning-esque type game against the Ravens, but at that point in the season, the Ravens didn't have a great running game. They were missing some guys. If I'm not mistaken, Donnell Ellerby didn't play. You know, Ray obviously didn't play. When we played them a few weeks ago. So, you know, they were able to let Knowshon Moreno kind of run rampant over that defense. And that allowed the wide receivers to get some separation because they were so busy trying to play the run. And, you know, so I don't necessarily accredit that win to Peyton Manning. He just so happens to be the quarterback for that team. But, you know, it's just something about him. It's just something about we just can't beat a Peyton Manning-led team. And I don't know what it is.
Ali?
Well, you know, Peyton Manning in his last nine games is 9-0 against Baltimore.
Right.
You know, 9-2 overall. So the law of averages would have you to believe that, you know what, the Ravens actually have an opportunity here to do something. I'm not too convinced that if he was in a wheelchair, that it'd still be a given. And Cyrita makes an excellent point. You know, in that last game, you know, he was a pedestrian, 204 yards. You mentioned Knowshon Moreno ran for 115 yards, and that was really the difference. You know, people look at the aggregate result of that game and will say, oh, you know, the Ravens had a mud hole stomped in them. But it was 10-0, close to halftime. The Ravens were driving the ball. I think it was on a 4-yard line was when Flacco had that brain flatulence and threw that out pass that was returned for the longest interception return in Broncos history. So you could have easily had a 10-7 game going into halftime, which greatly changes the paradigm of what the outcome looks like. So, you know, 10-7 as opposed to 17-0. Again, the Ravens got started late in that game. I think it was like 31-3 before Dennis Pitta and Flacco really started to get things moving.
Yeah.
Caldwell's first game as an offensive coordinator. But when you look at what they did this week, the adjustment was fantastic in terms of, okay, so if you're going to double-team Torrey in the first half, we're gonna showcase Anquan Boldin. This guy didn't have a catch in the first half, finishes with 5 and 145 yards. The Ravens have a legitimate opportunity to do something really, really big this week.
You all both optimistic about Saturday? You really are.
I am. I records are made to be broken. And you know, we learned that with Drew Brees breaking Johnny Unitas's record. It's been there forever. 9 wins is a lot. And let's talk about 2009, when the Ravens really never beat New England. They go into New England, and Joe Flacco basically can't sit down on the plane the week before because his leg is badly bruised. And they go in and they stomp a mud hole in New England. So it can happen. I believe, out of all the times that this is the time, I believe that they can beat them, and I agree with him. You know, 10-7 is a huge difference as opposed to 17-0. It changes the entire psyche of the game, and Joe Flacco's just not the kind of guy that really knows how to redeem himself. They go into that game and they make it a close game, they can come out and win that football game.
You know, they have a monumental challenge ahead of them.
Huge.
But I do think, you know, looking at it optimistically, that they have an opportunity. Offensively, when you look at what Pierce gave you out of the backfield, Ray Rice didn't lose a fumble all year long. So you know that, you know, that was
a fluke.
That was out of the ordinary for him to fumble two times.
Yes.
However, if you do that against Peyton Manning, Indianapolis couldn't capitalize on those turnovers. Peyton Manning will kill you if you fumble the ball and he gets possession of the ball. You know, talking about that challenge, the linebackers and the defensive line for the Ravens did a great job of getting pressure yesterday on Luck. The Denver offensive line, I think, only gave up the second most sacks in the NFL this year. So we're going to see an entirely different ball game. The Ravens have a huge challenge ahead of them. However, NFL football is so interesting because once you're in the tournament, you've got an opportunity to do something. And I think it was 7 out of the last 8 years, there's been a team who came out of the wild card round who's made it to the Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. So,
and it could be the Ravens once again.
Yep. Absolutely.
So and this is not – before I jump into this, you mentioned Ray Lewis. What does Ray Lewis mean? Well, what does he mean to this team and to football? I mean, this is his last game at home ever. He's retiring. He's been on the team since the beginning, right?
Yes.
Was the only or the last of the original players?
Yes, he
right?
is. Yes.
Right? So, I mean, how would you define Ray Lewis for this team?
He's the face of the franchise. You know, Jonathan Ogden was drafted before him, but nobody's going to identify an offensive lineman as the face of your franchise. I think that situation, you know, the unfortunate situation that happened in Atlanta in 2000 was an eye-opener for him. I think that allowed him to realize how great he could be, and he just had some things that he had in the way that he had to get rid of. And once he did that, we saw him flourish from that point on. You always saw how good he was prior to that, but I believe that situation elevated his play for a lot of reasons. And from that point on, he carried that team on his back. And when you hear guys like Rod Woodson and Shannon Sharpe, these guys are clearly older than him. And they talked about the type of leader that he was, you know, to them. And he learned a lot from them, but they learned a lot from him as well. He said, you know, this is my city. This is my team. I want to carry this team. And he's done that. And it's going to be interesting to see what happens to the Ravens once he leaves, because I believe he's always been the glue to keep this team together through bad times, through good times, whatever it is, any type of adversity. I believe Ray Lewis is the guy that everybody turns to, and he makes things all better. You know what I mean? So he's everything to this team, to this city, and to the NFL. You got guys that want to trade jerseys with him after every game. They talk to him after every game. They confide in him after every game. Because
opposing players.
Yes, opposing
right.
players.
Right.
You know, they have utmost respect for him. And, you know, it's because he's willing to help them. He's willing to help them grow from a professional standpoint and from an emotional and a spiritual standpoint as well.
I think, you know, Ray is the spiritual nerve center of that team. You can look at the Hall of Fame stats. You can look at the fact that he's probably the greatest middle linebacker in the history of the NFL.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, when you look at that position, you know, you've got guys like Jack Ham. You've got guys like Dick Butkus.
Right.
You've got guys like Mike Singletary. I think
don't forget
Ray
Lawrence
Lewis,
Taylor.
Well, I was going to say LT. LT was an outside linebacker.
Yeah, but people love to bring that
right.
in that conversation.
But I think LT. If I had to choose between the two, I'd say LT was probably the greatest because he was a transcendent talent who changed the position and the thought process of what a linebacker
yes.
was.
He put the intelligence in the linebacker
yes.
position.
But
yes.
He brought that. You have to have a mind, not just a body,
right.
to play the game.
But when you're talking about Ray, there's so much, much more to him than the physical attributes and the statistics and the tackles. You know, there are some things in our society that we can't necessarily put a finger on, and it's about leadership capacity. It's about the ability to mentor. It's about the opportunity a person has to make other people elevate themselves to a level that they would never normally attain. And I think that's the magic and the beauty and the genius of Ray Lewis, in that he can walk into a locker room and he can motivate people to do things that they wouldn't necessarily do on their own. They can't conjure it up on their own. There are some people who have leadership ability, but Ray is a little bit different. He's tapped into a power source that very few people understand truly exists. And he's able to transfer that to his teammates. So when you ask what he means, I think you can't even quantify it. You can talk about the economic impact he's had on the city, you know, how he's benefited the restaurant industry, the hotel industry, the food and beverage. I mean, all of that other stuff. But when you look at how he's been able, look at how many defensive coordinators, how many free agents have gotten opportunities to go other places, and we find out without Ray Lewis, they're doo-doo in a shoe.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, so, you know, he's an unbelievable talent, persona, energy source that probably will not be duplicated again in our lifetime.
So one of the things that Milton Kent wrote today on Facebook, you know Milton?
Yes, I do.
Yep. And he's a great nose to sports, mm-hmm. And I love Milton. And he'll be on the show for the next couple of weeks as we look at the coming Super Bowl, no matter what happens on Saturday. And you guys will be back for that as well.
Yes.
Right, correct.
He said that, before throwing away millions on Joe Flacco, the Ravens had better lock up Paul Kruger to a long-term deal.
I agree with that. To be honest with you, though, he is not my biggest free agent on my team. Danelle Ellaby deserves a lot of praise. When he's not in the game, it shows. And when he's in the game, it shows. There's a difference. Paul Kruger has finally, the light has finally come on for Paul Kruger this year. Before that, we saw that he had the opportunity to be really good, but he just couldn't put all the pieces together. Danelle Ellaby, I believe, is a bigger part of that equation because he is very good with stopping the run. He can blitz. He can shoot that gap. And he's good in pass coverage as well. Paul Kruger's job is to get at the quarterback. And he's very good at it. But Danelle Ellaby brings a lot more elements. I agree with him. He's just not the number one guy on my defense that I feel like needs to be signed.
Mm-hmm. Ali?
You know, we had this very long and exhaustive and very intelligent discussion about Joe Flacco the last time the three mm-hmm. of us were in the studio together.
Right, right, right.
And, you know, I will still maintain my position on being very optimistic about this guy's ability, his potential. He's experienced some growing pains this year, but when you look at the fact that as long as he's been in the NFL, this guy has won a playoff game every year. So he's the only quarterback to do that. I believe it's for the first 5 years in a row in the Super Bowl era. In the Super Bowl era, but also, you know, he just broke Otto Graham's record in terms of winning a playoff game in each of his first five seasons. So when you talk about a guy like Otto Graham, who is one of the all-time great NFL quarterbacks, we're not saying Flacco is Otto Graham, but what we're saying is this guy to have had the experience he's had in the first 5 years of his NFL career, and we see the potential that he has. I say you got to lock that guy up. Don't take a chance on bringing somebody in and doing something new and starting over from scratch.
Here's my thing about that, though. You know, everybody loves to talk about how they don't like Joe Flacco. Well, give me a better option.
Right.
If you can give me a better option as to who's out there,
right,
I'd love to hear that. You know, is he inconsistent? Absolutely. But if you can't tell me who you're going to bring in here, then this is really not a discussion. Because if he hits that open market, there's 12 teams off the top that would take him for top money, without question.
And Sarita, you know, people have such unbelievably unrealistic expectations. You know, they look at Peyton Manning. They look at, you know, the Drew Breeses. They look at the Aaron Rodgers, the great quarterbacks in the National Football League. Those guys do not come a dime a dozen.
Exactly.
And when you have a guy who has the potential that you can develop, there are some weeks where he does play on that level. People forget that those guys had growing pains too. They didn't come out of the womb throwing for 5,000 yards and winning Super Bowls. So when you have a guy that you've been able to groom who understands the personality of the organization, who really has a symbiotic relationship with what it means to be a Raven and the goals that you're trying to get to, I think you know, it's a no-brainer. You lock that guy up.
So do you think that the fact that the Ravens are the only team going into this next weekend that has a short amount of time to get ready? Other teams have a week more to kind of rest, get themselves ready for the games. The Ravens are kind of being shoved into this quick turnaround on Saturday. How's that going to affect things?
Absolutely. It's definitely going to affect them. Not only is it one less day, they're going to, not the West Coast, but Colorado. They're going to,
right.
You know, Colorado is, what, 5,000 feet above elevation. Mm-hmm. That's a big difference. Some people can't play in those types of conditions. It's going to be 18 degrees, they said. It's possibly going to snow. Not that that matters, but you get my point. You know, they're getting ready to travel, you know, almost clear across the country to play this team. I really try not to be a conspiracy theorist. Because in a way, I do believe that these games are set up beforehand, you know. But it's hard for me to kind of not think that the NFL would love to see a Peyton Manning, Tom Brady AFC championship, because the numbers would go through the roof. That's an old rivalry that people love. You know, they're both teams are obviously the number one and number two seed. I really don't want to say that, but there's a part of me that believes in that. The thing about that, though, is that you have to do what you have to do no matter what. Stop making excuses. You got to do what you got to do. If you got to go, I don't care, Hawaii, if you got to make the 13-hour trip on a Friday, that's what you have to do to win football games. You just got to suck it up and do what you have to do. The Ravens have to be prepared, period. There's no excuses, no question about it.
You know, one thing I do know is that sorry, if you were a coach, you'd be a tough coach. I can feel it
they
now.
They would hate me.
So do you think that'll hurt?
I think it can, but I'm going to flip the other side of the coin. And I'm just going to say that the Ravens have been playing with a sense of urgency because of the way the season wound down. You know, it was not up to anyone's sense of expectation, especially when, you know, 4 and 5 weeks left in the season, you could make a legitimate argument that the Ravens were one of the best teams. It wasn't until the Denver loss, and then, you know, there were 2 3-point losses
right
before that, and you could say, okay, those were close games. The Denver loss was the one that really said, well, the Ravens are really not on that level.
Mm-hmm.
And so now with Ray Lewis, everybody being aware that this could be his last game, I think it could be a rallying opportunity for the team to say, you know what, we've had to fight to get here. We had to get through the wild card. And you know what, Denver's been sitting around. Yeah, they might be rested. But, you know, the human nature says we had the week off. They had to play in the wild card round, and psychologically, you walk in thinking that you're automatically better than this team, and that could work to
but
Baltimore's
then,
advantage.
But then what has to work next weekend?
Everything.
What pieces that you saw Sunday that didn't work have to work if this is going to happen?
He mentioned earlier Jim Caldwell. That was his first game. I think now they're acclimated with him. The thing that I like about Jim Caldwell that I didn't like about Cam Cameron is they found ways to adjust. And I don't think that we saw that with Cam Cameron. Cam would come out there and say, okay, well, my plan is my plan. It's going to work. And it just wouldn't work. The first half was lethargic for the Ravens. And then in the second half, they found ways to get Anquan Boldin the ball, which is vastly important, as well as continuously run the ball. So I think that, you know, things might not go the way that they're playing, but as long as you don't make key mistakes, the fumbles that Ray Rice had, can't do that, like you said, in Denver. You know, Joe Flacco having a bad play like he did the last Denver game. If you can keep honest and make the game close, and then in the second halftime, you go into halftime and you figure out, okay, this is what they're doing. This is how we make those changes. They have every chance to win this football game. I'm not scared of Peyton Manning, and I don't think that they should be either, because they have the opportunity. They're good, and now they have Ray Lewis retiring. They have all right. the inspiration in the world to win this football game.
I think the key for the Ravens, which is really going to give them an opportunity to walk away from this game with the victory, is being in Peyton Manning's face. They're going to have to pressure him. When he gets hit, you can't give him all the time in the world to sit in that pocket, because he will surgically take you apart. But if he feels the rush coming, if he feels like he has to make a decision a little bit faster than he would like to, if he doesn't have enough time to really analyze and make those split-second decisions, he has to play scared. They have to make him think about, okay, I don't have that much time. I got to do something really quick, as opposed to him taking the normal time he'd like to take. So I think defensive line, linebackers, you blitz some defensive backs, you get some pressure on him.
Mm-hmm.
If he feels the heat, they've got an opportunity.
Ali Danois, contributor here to the Baltimore's Blend, Baltimore Blend here on WEA, senior editor of Bounce Magazine, freelance writer. You can read his stuff in Dime Magazine, LA Times, Baltimore Sun, New York Times. The man can write for anybody. Sarita Hubbard knows so much about football, I don't even know where to start. She's published with the sports blogs NFLChick.com and GridironGals.com. Thank you both for being here once again.
Thank you for having us.
And Saturday, we'll see.
Yes, We'll be victorious. Let's speak it into existence.
All right. And then next week we'll be back again.
Yes, yes. We will.
To talk about this game and see where we take it then.
That's right. We'll talk about those championship games.
All right. Let's go purple.
All right.
Thank you all for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our producers are Bobby Marvin Holmes, Stephanie Mavronis, and Mark Gunnery. Our theme music is by Walt Matthews of Clean Cuts. For WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community, I'm Mark Steiner. Take care.